This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
Throughout the diocese, we're going to be doing that. And it couldn't be more timely as we enter this election season. So I hope you will think about participating in that with us. And people will be doing it in churches across the diocese. And we want to know if you want to do that as a church in, at St. David's, if you want to do that with us. But we'll be ramping that kicking that off. It was in your bulletin on May 22nd. So if you're interested in doing that together as a church, please sign up for that. So we were plotting and planning about how to get people to do that as we work together this week. I'm so grateful for his work at the Episcopal Health Foundation and for the resources that he brings to us. It's invaluable. He brings these resources to so many people in Texas. And I'm so grateful that he's able to join us today. Please welcome me, help me welcome Reverend Willie Bennett.
All right, good morning, everybody. The Lord be with you. I am so delighted to be here with you this morning. I bring you greetings from the Episcopal Health Foundation, and in particular, from somebody named Eric Moen. I don't know if you remember him or not. But he's kind of memorable, right? Eric and I were in Bryan College Station on Friday doing a listening session around the participants, the principals involved in a multi-community, multi-ethnic mobile food pantry that came about with dollars that we had given. And so we were listening to what started out as the no-budget food pantry, and now it's a big deal in Bryan College Station. So there on Friday, then came home, saw my wife, and got back on the road last night to be here with you. Looking forward to it. We have some other stops the rest of this month, but always happy to talk about the work of the foundation and what we do as the congregation engagement portion of the session. We're kind of the hardest part of it to understand because we don't quite fit, you know, what most people think of when they think of a foundation. Kind of like me. I was comparing notes with Dr. Mona. I'm kind of odd because I was ordained for the work of organizing, which I just made up, right? It's not anywhere else anywhere. It's something that was uniquely Austin because it was done when I was here. And I was telling her we had rabbis, we had priests, we had nuns, we had Baptist, Methodist, Episcopalians, and Chittagonica, everything was there. It was really beautiful. It was wonderful. And I still got ordained, which is the goal. But I'm going to share here with you today a little bit about the Episcopal Health Foundation and what we do, a little bit more about me. My wife and I have three daughters, all girls. My baby girl, you know, we have to say baby, they still have babies. She's about to graduate from Prairie View, and today is her birthday. So she's a Cinco de Mayo baby, so I'll be going by there on the way home. I had my first grandchild last month. Yes, I have not seen him yet, but we're trying to get away to go there. We're trying to get those schedules together. I hear it's nice being a grandparent. Is that true? I'm gonna, it feels good right now. And I haven't held him yet, but it feels good. I started this workout when I got out of seminary, and I had this crazy belief. I don't know where I got it from. I just felt that we needed to be where people were who were hurting and serving them. I don't know, I know it's radical, I know it's crazy. Don't know where I could get that from, particularly going to seminary, but hey, I came out with that belief. So was working at Bethlehem Community Center on the short south side of Fort Worth, just north of the red light district, right off of Rosedale. And I was director of that community center. And that's where my seminary instruction ran into reality. And it changed the trajectory of my life and the ministry that I would have. And it's part of how I ended up here. Fought to get a crack house closed down. Nothing that I did worked. everything I did was the wrong thing. But there's one thing I did that was right. I had begun building relationships with people in the community. Didn't know what to do with those relationships. I was just going to meetings, meeting people. People liked me. They supported what we were doing. And I ran into this crazy organizer who said, you know, you're going to get yourself killed. This is the height of drive-by shootings. And Fort Worth was the capital of drive-by shootings, most per capita in the country at the time. He said, what you need to do is you need to involve the community. You're direct the community center. You say you know all these people. Why don't you ask them to work with you? I mean, it's their community, not yours. They're the ones who are going to be here when it's all said and done. You're not going to be here. Why don't you involve them? No revelation. So that's what we did. Long story short, we ended up writing a grant for $1 million to Daddy Bush for prevention of substance abuse. Got the $1 million. We won those 1,000 points of light. Got the crack house down in about 5 months. We've been fighting to get the crack house down for about 2 years before that. And the police had told me, we can't do anything. People have a right to their own homes. You just can't go take people's property. When we got that $1 million, the police captain called me back, said, there's a law on the books that says, that changed my way of thinking. Because I saw, one, that you could get real change. Two, I saw some of the problems. Three, I was giving out a lot of food and doing a lot of good work, and we were absolutely changing nothing. But the thing that changed that neighborhood was getting that crack house closed down. And that always stuck with me, and it would stay with me for the rest of my life. So these are my colleagues, and Eisner, who coordinates everything else as our admin, Eric Moen, Melody Toles, my other colleague. We are the Congregational Engagement Division of the Episcopal Health Foundation. Okay. So health, not just healthcare. So we adopted that slogan when they started because about 98 to 99% of health-facing dollars goes for clinics, hospitals, or what we call sick care. But those dollars and that work only accounts for about 20% of the positive outcomes. It's the 80% that's getting 1% to 2% of the funding that account for the greatest outcomes. And those are the social determinants of health. It's all those things that impact communities, that keep us well or don't keep us well. It's having sidewalks, it's having street lights. It's living in a place that doesn't have mold. It is doing like you're able to walk around the street because you're gonna be safe. It's having access to healthy food and vegetables in your neighborhood, is having access and the belief that if you go to the doctor, you actually get treated and you can afford it, all those things. And so we adopted that slogan to begin to work upstream on the problem of health. It's not health care, it's health rather, not health, it's health care. So it's not about people going to the doctor, it's about keeping people from going to the doctor. We felt that if we could do that, we could lower the cost and have better, healthier communities. And so we have three big divisions. We have the grants division, which everybody knows and loves. That's not us. We have the research, which has done just crackerjack work on all kinds of things. There, if you go to our website, you can see the morbidity study, which talked about how you can predict how long someone will live by the zip code that they're in. Really, really good work. We used their work when I was organizing in Harvey, when we were at the legislature 2 sessions ago. Everyone who spoke about Medicaid expansion, everything they said came from EHF, either because we funded it directly or someone else who was funded by us had written it up. Everything that they said originated with us. And most of the players there were funded with us by some kind of way. And then, of course, there's activating communities and congregations. That's the engagement piece. There we go. So where does EHF come from? Physical Health came, come from? Physical Health Foundation came from the sale of St. David's. St. Luke's, I'm sorry. I'm at St. David's, sorry. Keep me straight. So with those proceeds, a tithe was given to create the Great Commission Foundation. You had diocesan related grants. The big one's clergy health insurance. Monies were set aside to pay for clergy health insurance for pastors, rectors. Then in 2022, $260 million was put in to cover all clergy in perpetuity forever. And so that is something that we think is a big deal. It's, actually, how can I become Episcopalian? Let me go see if I can get into the clergy graph here. But that's really nice. And it's because we believe in healthcare. And it's your dollars. The kind of work that we do with congregations that makes us different is all in line of this whole idea of we're trying to prevent things from happening. We're trying to work upstream, right? And so we have this spectrum that we call the transformation spectrum. And how long do I have, folks? When do I need to?
Around 10:45, if you want to have time for questions or conversation.
Okay, so 10:45, hard stop, so we can have some conversation.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll try to get in just a little bit under that. Transactional, transitional, transformational. Transactional would be like a basic food delivery or any kind of service where it is a transaction. You're doing something to give someone some food, or you're paying their rent, or something that you're doing for someone. The intent is short term. It's born out of, many of them are born out of emergency situations. And there's a concern, the charity-oriented approach is out of concern for people's health and welfare. And this is our wheelhouse as churches. This is what we do and do it well. And it's one of the first things that churches do, and it's very easy to understand. But what we're saying here is let's not stop there. So that is good. We want to keep doing that, but let's think further. Let's see if we can move beyond the transaction because things may have changed. What if we actually talk to the people that we're working with and begin to understand why they're needing food, why they're needing clothes, why they're needing rent assistance, yada, yada, yada. And begin to figure out with them, okay, do we still need to do the food that we're doing? Or maybe do we need to do something else? Or can we leverage the work that we're doing with food into something else to begin to make it so that people don't need food? And so we want to move from transaction to transition, where we're building relationships, we're learning new things, changing mindsets, because we may think one thing is going on, but after we talk to folks and work with the community, we understand maybe something else is going on. The community may look at us one way, but after we go out and show that we're concerned and get on their turf, they think differently about us. So we want to change mindsets and we want to participate with the community. And transformational is we're doing with. It is not us coming in, this is our program, our dollars, this is how it's going to go. No, it's saying, okay, let's come alongside the community. Can we work together to figure this bad boy out? And all of us have ownership, not just the church. So when I was at that community center, didn't know much of nothing, but I did like meeting people and building relationships. So I started doing this, but I didn't know I was doing it. And then the organizer said, you know, why don't you talk to the people that you know? Why don't you ask them if they're concerned about it? Well, I knew they were. And so that's when they agreed to work with us to go after that grant. Well, I was leveraging the relationships that I had. I didn't know that terminology then. But relationships are not only built just to have a relationship, but relationships can also help us get things done. Anything worthwhile doing is going to involve other people. So we ought to learn how to work together and figure out how we can do things together. And so I began moving into this transitional space. And then I made them an offer. I said, folks, you want to come work? They said, yes. And so we began figuring out how to work together. And we brought a lot of nonprofits in with us. So we had nonprofits, we had the community, we had the police, all working together to try to figure out how to get this crack house closed now. I mean, one crack house. Anyway, so we got here. Didn't quite get to here. We got some glimpses of this. You know, we got some glimpses of it. We got there, got real close. We got the money. But then the people in the suits, the people who have staff by their name, the people who know better, they took the money. And the community got what was left, which is not an unusual story. And, you know, crazy me. I just didn't understand. You know, I'm thinking if the community helped write this grant, the only reason you got it is because of the community. Then we ought to have a meeting at 6 o'clock to talk about it, not at 12 noon when most people are working. But I just didn't understand. And so we didn't quite get to the doing. But this is where we want to take congregations. We want to move congregations from transactional, using relationships and the goodwill that we have built up through the transactional work they've done, the closed closets, food pantries, everything that's direct service. We want to take those relationships, that strength, that capital that you built, and let's figure out if we can do some other things. Because there's a reason why people need what they need, and things don't have to be the way they are. Things do not have to be the way they are. We accept them. I believe that in every fiber of my being. They don't have to be the way they are. Now, it's not easy to change it, but if we work together, we can. And so we want congregations to move this way. And I'll tell you some stories about how it happens. So we have four focus areas in congregational engagement. So this is our team has four focus areas: mental health, poverty alleviation, racial justice, civic engagement. Those are big, broad categories. Mental health is one that we've known most known for. Am I too loud?
No, it's just this microphone is rubbing up against your lapel. And there, I think that might help.
All right, thank you. 1,400 certified in mental health first aid has been one of my most popular things that we've done. We're going to mental health first aid 2.0 now, where we're going to be doing some things off of that because of the great work some of our churches have done, where they have started out with just the training and then offering it as a church. Then in one particular case, they wanted to see, well, how can we work with the community more? So they went to the mental health meetings that the county had to learn what they were doing. Then they started hosting the meetings for the different agencies. Now they run the program. And they serve multiple counties. They are doing just a fantastic job, and the county has them working with inmates. County has them doing several different things. It's phenomenal what they have done, and so we're looking to take it to the next step because some of our congregations have done an excellent job, and so they're the trailblazers, and we want to help support them as they move forward, and then as others come in, they can go through the path that these others have blazed. Racial justice, traces of the trade, something that we do about the history of slavery and the Episcopal Church. One Human Race, which is here in Austin, great work that they're doing. This is all part of our racial justice portfolio. Holy Currencies, many people have gone through Holy Currencies. How many people here have gone through Holy Currencies, anybody? Okay. Holy Currencies is another popular offering. This is about ministry creation. This has been one of my most successful things that we have done in terms of working with congregations to do outward facing work in the community. It is the Kaleidoscope Institute leads this. And we're getting ready to start up a cohort this fall. So now is the time you're going to be getting information this month on it. Also, we have trainings. We pay for conferences. There's no cost for doing In Common. We held In Common here before the pandemic. But also, we support congregations to going to other trainings that they need for outward-facing work. Transformation cohort. This is like an on-ramp to Holy Currencies. It was originated out of an attempt to help congregations that were middle-sized or small to be able to get some help in doing our work to reach out to the community. And it's just blown up. I mean, it was, we just said, can you have two conversations with partners that you don't know? And our folks are really ambitious. And so in Navasota, you may have heard about the Rainbow Room. They had a conversation with child welfare. Now they have a place where when moms and kids are taken from their homes, they can come to the church and they can get clothes, diapers, whatever they need, which is a huge deal in Navasota because there's nothing like that there. But that has gotten them more in relationship with the community and has led to other things that they're doing in their small town. It has changed the way the church is seen. In Bryan College Station, where I was on Friday, they said, okay, we want to do a food pantry. And we're like, well, you know, the place where your church is, that's not where the food is needed. So doing a food pantry there is not the best thing. So why don't you have more conversations? So they began having conversations. They came back and said, well, we need to do this with the mobile home park that's going to get closed down. I said, well, that could work, but you got to understand that's going to be a tough fight when you don't have a lot of people with you. It's good that you let people know this, but you also got to ask, are people willing to stand up and have you do this with them? Which they weren't. And so they kept looking, kept having conversations, and they hit gold. They met a key person at a Catholic church who was key to that neighborhood. They also met the new YMCA director. Make a long story short, they had no money, but through the relationships that they'd built and the diocese also helping them, they were able to start a mobile food pantry at the Y and have that supported by the Catholic Church and other Episcopal churches. So they went from having no food, no anything, to doing 400 families. And I wish I could show you the picture of it. The cars are all lined up. And so that was a year and a half ago. When I talk with them on Friday, they're talking about doing three pantries that support each other and support this existing one they have to expand and do more. The other piece is because of what they did, there is now a hunger hunger organization that has formed with the help of Baylor Collaborative on Hunger and Poverty in Bryan College Station. And what makes it different is because these folks had gone out and met people from all ethnicities. This meeting was very diverse. This group is very diverse in the Hunger Coalition. We paid for translation services so to make sure that everybody could understand. And they had over 60 people at their first meeting. And it was a very diverse crowd. For Bryan College Station, that was a big deal. And so that has all come out of people having conversations and no money. Like they kept saying, give us $10,000. Give us. I told you. Up front, there's no money attached to this. Okay, there's no money. We don't have money in congregations. Okay, that's the grants department, you know. But I said, keep having the conversations, and they did. And it was wonderful work that they've done. In Common, we just had it at Camp Allen. It was a great event. It's a chance for congregations we're working with throughout the state to come together and hear what each other's doing. Traces of the Trade. I talked about that. It's part of our racial justice piece. One thing that people don't know is you can go to our website and you can get information about different counties, your county, your city, on these health maps. And that is there for you. And if you have problems with it, you can call us and our researchers can help you with information for your church. We communicate through our newsletters and our EHF Church's Facebook page. So if you've not done it, sign up for the EHF Church's Facebook page. Now I'm going to talk in the time that we have left about our new strategic framework, because we had a great first 8 years. Learned a lot. Some things worked, some things didn't. We grouped and said, we're going to take what we did that was working, that was right, and we're going to double down on that and look at some areas that we hadn't worked with before that now we know we need to be involved in. We've changed the conversation how Texas thinks about health. So before EHF, people knew it. They knew that an ounce of prevention was worth a pound of cure. But we weren't putting our money where our mouth was on that. And so EHF has come in with a health and not healthcare slogan. And at the highest levels, through research and through conversations, we've been able to get that message out there and begin to slowly change how we do what we do in healthcare. So in the first area, health and healthcare services, that's the first of our action areas. So we still do work with clinics, though we are working with clinics to be self-sustainable. That is the key. To continue to work with EHF, you have to be working towards being self-sustainable. Healthy communities, we want to promote healthy communities as part of the work that we do. Here's for the benefits of walking, and we're going to tell a story about that in just a moment. Health policies, we have to change policy. And we've done some of that. This is one example, HB 1575. We did some of the research that went into the bill, and then we were there supporting the changes of it. And this provides dollars for community health workers. So health and healthcare services, health communities, health policies, those are our three action areas for the organization. This is a story about how these things work together. So Access Health, whom we met with last Monday, is a big clinic in Fort Bend County. Lots of doctors do really good work. They want to work with the community. And so the engagement division, the community division, went and showed them how to have those conversations. They began to have the conversations, and the thing that they hear about is inadequate infrastructure, sidewalks, streets. Well, normally they would say that's not our job. But because of the training, they said, okay, we're gonna work with the community on this. And they were able to get sidewalks that allow people to walk to different destinations and to feel comfortable about that and even walk to their clinic. The significance of this is that people are getting out and walking. They're also able to walk to services, but it shows what can happen when an agency begins working with the community to kind of change the reality. Coincidentally, I was still organizing at that time. I was organizing in Houston. I was the lead organizer there. And I had gone to Fort Bend and begun some initial conversations because we were looking at doing work in the area. And this was the issue that came up, lack of sidewalks. And so Harvey killed that work because everything stopped with Harvey. But it was good for me to see that these folks were able to get sidewalks in. So those three action areas are fairly broad, and we want to be able to prove that what we're doing is making a difference. And so we have three priority areas that are the focus, so that whatever we do, as congregational engagement, as grants, as research, it has to impact the bottom line on these three areas: food, maternal health, diabetes prevention. 1 in 4 Black children and 1 in 5 Latino children experience hunger. 1/3 of households live below the poverty line and lack reliable access to adequate nutrition. So how do we want to tackle that? Well, we want to do it by having healthy communities, letting people know about SNAP, healthy cooking demonstrations, farmers markets active. One of our churches created a great farmers market that has changed their city. Healthcare and health services, screen for food, healthy food prescription provided. 2 weeks ago, we went down to Waco and saw some of the places where this was being done. Food-related chronic conditions identified for health policies, pay for food as medicine interventions, double up bucks, which allow for twice as much food to be gathered with a SNAP at your farmer's markets, screening for food security. So that's one way those three things can work to improve food and nutrition security. The other thing about food is a gateway. Food is the first step. So many churches start with food, but they take it somewhere else. And what we're saying is, look, if we invest in and around this whole food network, then we can begin to leverage other things for food. 2 weeks ago, we're working with a partner that sent out emails to over 1,000 churches, agencies in Texas that were doing food work, over 1,000. Isn't that a lot? Isn't that something? We'll see how many we get back, but that's the beginnings of a network that one can share information, work together, but also can leverage changes in policy. Maternal health, up to 90% of maternal health deaths are preventable. So doulas and CHWs serve. The importance of prenatal, postnatal care for health and healthcare services, chronic conditions identified, health policy, expansion of postpartum coverage, which we were part of, making that happen. We were down there at the Capitol in support with research, but also providing infrastructure support for Episcopal-related organizations that were there. Diabetes, this is the team I'm on. All of us have been divided up into three teams, maternal health, food and nutrition security, and diabetes. I'm on the diabetes team. The thing that's bad about this is that 50% of Texans either have diabetes or they're pre-diabetic and they don't know it. It is a huge, huge issue in the state. We want to begin to tackle that by, again, healthy lifestyles, food supply, health and healthcare services, pre-diabetes identified, health policies that help prevent diabetes. The idea in all of these is that we're not going to just go in with one approach. We're going to try several approaches. We're trying to figure all that out now. But for sure, it's going to depend a lot on what the communities tell us. And so we're having lots of community conversations. And after we make the final decision on how we want to cut the apple, then we're going to have more community conversations to understand how to implement. So this is where we are with EHF and how we're looking to ignite change. All right, I went through really fast and came under. So what questions do you have off of what I've said so far?
The need for a church to be involved.
Yes, great question. So there are several entry points into EHF. One, you can just call Eric or call me or call Melody and say, hey, we'd like to work with EHF, and then we can share with you what might make sense for your congregation, what might be a fit, what's your interest? We'll ask that. Pretty soon we're going to ask that you read a certain piece that's going to be up on the website, which will be a level setting document or video that we're going to have for everyone that we're working on now. But we have several offerings. We're doing the transformation cohort right now, which is one offering that is ending this month. We're going to start up with holy currencies in the fall. That's another. If you say, hey, I'm not with that right now, I just want to know more about our community and what the needs are from the community's perspective, we can help you with that. We can come and do a training session with you on that. We can also let you know who are some of the grantees in your neighborhood, if that's of interest. If you're interested in and around race, we can connect you over the folks that are doing things in and around race, maybe hosting a Traces of the Trade event, which would be were really good. We just did one in Fort Worth, no more, Arlington rather, last month. Went very, very well. It's the first time we'd ever done anything in Arlington. So we would look to see what it is that you're interested in, and then we would try to figure out how to best support you in that. If you're not wanting to join any type of program, if you're not ready for that right now, if you just say, I just want to know my community better, then we could help you figure out how to do that. We could strategize with you on ways. There's several ways to do that. We can get the information off the internet, then walk the neighborhood to see more about it, and then we can come up with a strategy with you after that. But those are just some of the ways that we can work with the congregation. So working with us basically is being in conversation with us around action, some actions that you're taking in a conversation, congregation. Thank you. It almost sounded like I planted that question, but I have here some Vote Faithfully bookmarks. I don't have enough, so I'm gonna pass them out of them up here. HJAN, or the Health and Justice Advocacy Network, began with work towards the census. And so we were doing work to have congregations go into the community and do census events. And it was really exciting. And then the pandemic hit and everything went online. And we just went online and it still worked. After that, we said to the congregations and people involved, hey, do you want to continue doing policy work? Is that of interest to you? And they said, yes. And so that summer we came together and they put together their ideas of how to work together and what the focus would be. And HJAM was born, which is their focus is on health policy, starting with Medicaid expansion. That's the big thing. And so they have been working the last two sessions and in between on voting, getting out the vote. Of course, it's all nonpartisan. Medicaid expansion. This last session, they worked on extending Medicaid for new moms, which was successful. I tell them and I tell the foundation that Episcopal churches punch above their weight class, because they do. The session before last, we almost got Medicaid expansion to the floor. Like we did get to the floor, we got a floor vote, but we lost. To give you an idea, the people that I was working with HJAN had never, most of them had never done work like this before. It started with that session. And when it was about to come to the floor, we said, we've got to get to the Speaker of the House. And so I called together folks and I talked to Mary Lynn. And Mary Lynn said, I know someone who used to be roommates with him. And so she called him. No. It was his next door neighbor. She called his next door neighbor. He went over to talk to him, but he wasn't there. But someone else said, this was Norwich, Norwich, it's north of here. St. Julian's, the pastor there said, oh, we were roommates. And so he called him, we got the meeting with the Speaker of the House. This is before a major floor vote. EHF, HJAN, and others were there talking about Medicaid expansion. It failed, but I just pointed out just to show that the folks in HJAN made over 800 contacts with the legislature that session. 800. These are folks who had never done this before. And so that's the strategic impact that Episcopal churches can have. During this last session, HJAM was working on the issues affecting trans youth. What they did was interesting. The day after there was scuffle? What's the right word? It was a protest, but it ended badly. They ended up arresting people, taking people away. The next day, we were down here to go and meet with legislators, and they were having a counter protest and speeches about what had happened. And so I asked them. I said, "So, what do you guys want to do?" See, I'm I'm just the congregation engagement guy. This is just what you guys want to do. And they said, well, we don't want to get arrested today because we came down here to speak with the reps. And it was the right call because they went in and they were actually able to have conversations with legislatures. And many of them said, we did not understand the issue until you told us. Others said, you know, I still don't agree with it, but I'm glad that you came because we didn't understand it the way you said it. The value of them coming in, meeting with their callers, and taking the time to talk with the legislature really worked well. And we're going to continue to leverage that in the future. But the Health and Justice Advocacy Network, anyone can join that's Episcopalian. And if you're a partner with Episcopal Church, you join too. So they're working on their latest, which is the EDOT Reads. May 22nd is the kickoff date. There are going to be 4 sessions, one at 7, one at noon on Thursday. So the 7 p.m. is on Wednesdays, Thursday's noon. St. Julian of Norwich's pastor, Miles Brandon. Yeah, actually, it's not Miles. It's Daryl Hay. I finally remember Brian's, remember his name. Well, anyway, but Daryl Hay is going to be heading the one on Thursday, and Reverend Katie Wright will be heading the one on Wednesdays. Okay. And it's going to kick off with the meet the author on the 22nd with the bishop. So HCN is really excited about that. We got a good number of people signing up for it. There's going to be 4. It's going to be 5 sessions total, but the first is to meet the author, then there's 4 sessions after that. That's going to lead to a big celebration of July the 4th after we finish this, just to celebrate what it means to be a citizen in this country and all the things that it entails. And then in the fall, we're going to kick off a voting challenge. Again, we're going to see St. Matthew's has bragging rights now because they won, but we're going to see who can win the voting challenge. That's stay tuned for information on that for the fall. So that's the Health and Justice Advocacy Network, and that is led by about 10 lay and clergy in Episcopal churches. Other questions for me? Go ahead.
Team or another. Yeah. So would you just say a little bit about how you thread that needle? How does EHF, made not partisan, but be all to issues? I mentioned a couple of them that I think get quoted.
Yeah. Well, for the foundation, it is the approach from the health aspect. So for Medicaid expansion is an example. It is a game changer for health in Texas. There are millions of people that could be covered that are not. And it would bring billions of dollars into the state that we don't have. And it would change the outlook and the financial resources of counties, which people don't really get to see. We did an analysis county by county on what would happen regarding Medicaid expansion, which nobody read because you couldn't get it. And that was my big complaint. So we did this wonderful piece of research. Nobody knows about it. So we're going to work on rolling those kinds of things out. But it's in our interest, but it's been painted as a partisan issue for whatever reason. But for the foundation, it is seen as a health issue. So that's how they stand for that. And others approaching it from just health and health outcomes. And being aware of some of the political, and so the work that HGEN does is not work of EHF, though I assist them, but it's what they want to do.
Is there a general example of a lot of research that EHF does that translates into impact on local communities? Is there a role for congregations to play helping to disseminate that information both within their congregations, but also in terms of community outreach to say, on Medicaid expansion, this is where we need to grow at the Travis County. So more people that we meet, serve, know, get to know about that so that that information goes to better use.
No, exactly. That's what I want to have happen. So you can go to our website, to thiswillhelpfoundation.org, and look under research, and you'll see all the different research papers that have been done by topic that's there. So that's available to you. But what you're saying, churches can do independently, but many times need some prompting, and we want to do that. So around, last year around voting and the changes to vote by mail. So HJN did a lot of work letting people understand how you could do that. And they contacted media agencies and churches about how to make that happen. They physically went down to the elections office in their different cities and counties and just said, tell us how we should tell people, and built that relationship. And then began sharing it with other churches and other groups. I'd like to do that on other things. I'd love to do that on coverage expansion, love to do that on these priority areas. My vision would be doing a training session on any of these, maybe all three, that a church is interested in, and then say, okay, now what's your action plan? What would you like to do? You know, if this is important to you, how do you want to share this information? So.
Part of the reason we wanted to have this conversation is we're going to launch our advocacy committee, our advocacy group at St. David's. And these three issues, especially that Reverend Bennett identified, are baseline issues, I think, for us to discuss in the advocacy group. What do we want to prioritize as we talk and go forward? Of course, voting is something we're going to have to talk about how we go forward in the next few months and how we, register people. But in Travis County, a lot of people are registered. There are some disadvantaged groups, disenfranchised groups that are not, but it's more about turnout in Travis County for us. But these issues like expansion, is that going to be a priority that St. David's wants to explore as an issue? And how do we do that? Do we want to do some training? What do we want to prioritize as a church and as a group? And I feel like it's brilliant on the part of the Episcopal Health Foundation to have prioritized these issues in this way. And they have resourced us with the best information to get into coalition with others. So it's a great launching point for us to be able to utilize these resources. It'll be a great opportunity for us to partner and work together as a group. So if you are interested in helping us do that, the advocacy group is under the community engagement group committee. And we will be working together and have our first meeting on June 2nd. And we're trying to keep the integrity of the adult formation hour, which is at 10 o'clock. So our meetings are going to be at 11 o'clock because we know it's so hard for people to make it to church, make it to other meetings that are not on Sunday. So we're going to ask people to go to the 9 o'clock and then go to a CRALC lecture and then come to meet with us at 11. And so we're going to meet at June 2nd. So that's our first meeting, and then we'll be talking about some of these issues. So if you're interested in that, we'd love that. And if you're also interested in talking about the book beyond the online lectures, talking about Citizen, what I hear about the book, I haven't read it yet, but Willie has, is that it arms us with how to talk about being a citizen from a gospel perspective. And I think we really need that at this time as we get ready to get into the arena again on these issues. And so I'm very interested in being able to bring that perspective to our work as we do advocacy and as we do voting work. So there we go.
I will say that, I just lost my thought, but June 18th is gonna be a huge meeting in Bryan College Station about the priority areas. Some of you in this room may get an invitation to that. It's going to be our last big community conversation. And this fall, we're going to announce the new strategies. And that's going to impact how we work and what we do with congregations. And I think it's going to be really excited. I'm excited. I think that it's going to be a lot of clarity there. And we're also going to have some freedom to do some different things that we haven't done before. So I'm looking forward to this fall. Also looking forward to Eat Out Reads May 22nd, and then the voting challenge coming up in the fall. So
if you want to sign up for the advocacy of the, or you're interested in doing the book read, there's a sign up sheet back there. Can you join me? Thank you.
Thank you guys for allowing us to do what we do. Seriously.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.